All right. Another, this is our second podcast episode of the season. We're talking about the episode, which I think is supposed to be pronounced Rebel Rebel and not Rebel Rebel, which was, I'll be honest, so I watched the episode with Ashley, and Ashley will tell you that watching an episode of Homeland with me is a true experience, because I have a lot of rules and I have a lot of restrictions. You're not allowed to be on any devices or social media. You're not allowed to talk unless I initiate the conversation. There's a lot of rules. The lights have to be on. Like, I don't like having the lights off. So, but Ashley and I watched it, and we were both really excited about the Carrie parts of the episode. We knew that this was the episode, first of all, where, you know, there would be the therapist scene and she'd be talking about Quinn. We also knew that this would be the episode where she, like, whoops some dude's ass, which was probably the most exciting part for both of us. But beyond that, I was kind of lukewarm on the episode. I definitely did not like it as much as the premiere. As I was thinking about it later, it reminded me a lot of the second episode of season three, which is the one where, you know, Carrie starts – it's the one right after Carrie watches Saul's Senate testimony and, you know, is crying and sort of begins with her going to the newspaper newsroom, and then, you know, she gets arrested and then she's at the hearing and she, like, botches the hearing seemingly on purpose, and then she gets the Thorazine, and then at the very end she tells Saul to go fuck himself. And the reason that I felt like they were the same was because I remember watching that episode in season three, and it was a very specific arc for Carrie. By that I mean it had, like, a beginning, a middle, and an end sort of within that specific episode. In both this episode and in that one in season three, she's not in a lot of the scenes, but I just felt like there was sort of a very clear story that they were telling about Carrie, and kind of what her mental state was. And I actually did like a lot of the Carrie parts of the episode, despite the whole premise being a little bit like, ugh, what the fuck? But overall, you know, after I thought about it some more and after I rewatched the scenes that she was in more, I started to formulate a kind of general picture of what I think that they were doing. It might be a total sort of Sarah rationalization, but I liked those parts, was kind of meh on the rest. What'd you think, Gil?
You know, I have to agree. I wasn't in love with the first episode, but by comparison, the first episode was amazing to this because, like, I was kind of like, gosh, there was so much in that first episode that I felt, you know, I said this last week, it was ambitious, but this week was, like, the opposite. Like, I feel like this week they're like, all right, now let's take it down a notch. And I looking back at the first episode, they have set the table with quite a lot. This episode definitely feels to be like they're carving out Carrie's story, and they spent some time on that. So I understand the premise. I just feel like maybe it was a little flawed in its execution because I don't think there was enough else going on to offset maybe some of that setup. But, you know, it's always, for me, I do enjoy Claire Danes quite a bit. And so I feel like she acted the shit out of this episode. So I feel like that's a win for the viewer in terms of just, you know, watching her kind of do her thing. But for me, this whole hacker thing, it was just not for me. She's a grown ass woman who worked in the CIA. Oh my God. You don't click on attachments from other people ever. And I am not in the CIA, and I know that.
Well, okay. So I think we can get to that. Later, we definitely have a lot to unpack regarding her story. One thing that a lot of people had a lot of opinions about, good, bad, or otherwise, Ashley and myself were, like, sort of in shock and a little bit like, what the fuck are we watching right now, is the opening credits. So the opening credits are I feel like I'm very polarizing. You either love them or you completely hate them and you fast forward through them. I happen to fall into the former camp. I actually really love them, especially in the last few seasons where they've kind of switched them up. This opening credit sequence, I felt like, and I explained this a little bit on the blog because I think people had maybe thought that I was upset by them. I wasn't upset by them. I was just kind of like, whoa, that was like really unexpected. I kind of feel a little bit like fucked up by kind of what I just saw. You know, most of the opening credit sequence, they've changed them every single year since season four. And they've changed them drastically. They changed them slightly at the beginning of season three, but it was mostly the same images. They just changed a little bit of the sound clips. But every year since season four, they've changed them pretty drastically. Except, you know, there's always the girl in the maze, and there's always, you know, like the girl with the lion mask and all that stuff. But every season since season four, what they've done is they've formulated clips that have something to do with the current setting that they're in, you know, so whether it's Berlin or it's New York City or something like that. And the clips that they've used for both the, you know, the in motion clips that you see on the screen and also what they use for the sound typically come from the first few episodes of the season and the last few episodes of the previous season. And it's always sort of in the mindset of, let's get you into kind of the story that we're wanting to tell, you know, and the characters, and let's introduce you to kind of their current voice and what they're currently thinking. This was really different from that. This was using clips from all six seasons, and they were all related to Carrie's bipolar disorder, and they were all related to her in various states of mania, going back all the way to season one in the vest. They used clips from season three where she was in the mental hospital and Quinn was there, like all of the seasons. It seemed like they used some sort of an image from every single season where, you know, she had some sort of a mental break, which is most of them. And that's what all of the sort of voiceovers were related to as well. And that to me just put me in a totally different mindset watching the episode, which I think was kind of intentional because this episode, I think, was so focused on her mental state overall and kind of grounding you. And that is a baseline of like, this is where she is right now. But also, you know, you have to think of the opening credits as kind of the thesis statement for the season, in a way. And so with that too, I was kind of like, oh, like, wow, like this, like they're really going there, like they're serious about this, you know, it's not just something that they say at the beginning of the season and then it's kind of out the window. At least that's kind of what I'm thinking. And then there, and then the Quinn parts of it at the end where they use the words from his letter in the season five finale was like, I was like speechless. I think I was stunned that they did that. I don't know if it was a good stunned or a bad stunned. If it was like, I don't know really how to think about that. On the one hand, I think that it perhaps, you know, speaks to their comments about, you know, Quinn will color her every thought, you know, because those words, like the words that they used were, you know, just think of me as a beacon steering you clear of the rocks, which is the very end of the letter right before he says I loved you. And like I think that's the first time that the letter has ever been referenced since it was introduced in at the end of season five. I think it was just really surprised that they did that, that they used that. And you know, I think a lot of fans too are upset about that. Alex Gonza didn't write those words. Rupert Friend did, you know, considering the way that Quinn's arc ended and the sort of aftermath of all of that and how it played out in real life, too. Maybe it feels to them like taking advantage. I don't know.
I think maybe it does a little bit. I think that the reaction has been a mixed bag. I know when I watched it, I was caught off guard. I wasn't prepared for it. And I like found myself like crying. Like, I don't know. I just feel like I had kind of set Quinn, that storyline aside, to kind of make a peace with the show so I could watch it, still. And I wasn't ready for it to start that episode like that. So for me, I was like, really like, whoa. I don't know. It was very touching to me, but also like in some ways it's kind of shallow too of them. I know that sounds snotty. Maybe I'll grow out of that, but
I understand what you mean. It's like
it's late. It's late in the game.
Yeah.
It's awfully late for how poor he was, you know, on the show. Quinn's character was just treated so poorly for so long, and it was just two dark years of nonstop Quinn torture. And then, you know, everyone's just kind of polarized from it. Like, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to believe. I really did think after last week, and we talked about on the podcast, that I understood what they meant by he was coloring her every thought after watching the episode. Because I do feel that came across for me in that episode with her. And I see it even more so now with those credits, with her psychiatrist scenes that I'm sure we'll get into. But I don't know, man. I feel like I'm giving the show the benefit of the doubt so I can watch the season. But I got to say, like, I was kind of – I felt weird about it. I did.
Yeah, I think I wasn't prepared for it, and I think that's the best way to describe it. I'm not – that isn't necessary. I don't know if I felt – I don't know if I feel positive or negative about it. It definitely, it was a reaction. It was really surprising to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I just thought that they didn't. I think what you said about it being shallow and kind of too little too late makes a lot of sense. The time to honor his character is not in the credit and in the opening credit sequence, the season after he dies and after two seasons worth of torture and a really shitty arc for the character and, you know, a total lack of a send off or any sort of tribute to the character and the actor himself. That's not necessarily the time. To give them the benefit of the doubt is to say that they are honoring his presence in her life and what his loss really means to her, which I think leads really well into the scene with the therapist where, you know, he's explicitly brought up. His name isn't mentioned. Obviously, everyone knows exactly who she's talking about. And, you know, as I was thinking about it, I wrote a really long post about it on the blog today, but kind of what I thought of Carrie's arc and what I thought that, you know, the hacker stuff is totally out of nowhere. And without that context, it can feel like completely what was the point of all of this where and two, without the extra context of Quinn, I think it can also feel like, haven't we been here before? Like, haven't we watched an episode or four or five or six where like Carrie, you know, is struggling with her mental state and is going through some sort of a manic episode or is on the cusp of a manic episode. Like, we've done that before. It happens every other season, you know. What I think after I was watching it felt different to me is how she were the sort of invocations of Quinn. So the therapist invokes him and brings him up and Carrie is forced to talk about him. And forced to say, if he was here, he would be right alongside me because he always had my back and he was always there and he got it and you guys just don't get it. And, you know, of course, in the end, what, you know, she totally beats the shit out of that guy in a way that, you know, was very badass and, you know, Quinn-like or Jack Bauer-like or whatever, but I, you know, it was kind of...
Shout out to Ashley, by the way. Jack Bauer right, reference.
Right. Yeah, but I think that's maybe why it felt different to me than every other episode that we've seen where Carrie's in a manic episode, whether it's, you know, season one or season five or season three, is that there it seemed to be a somewhat of a comment on her loss, of him. Her loss of him is making her angrier. And Franny comments on it, says, why are you so mad all the time? And you always know, again, they're using kind of like the wise child sort of a trope, but like if Franny's picking up on, you know, some of her mom's behavior, they want you to notice that she's mad all the time. And then she goes and freaking almost kills that guy in like this like creepy warehouse. So I think that's why it felt different to me. I wasn't like super impressed, I'd say, by the language that they used in the therapist scene. It was kind of middle of the road. At least they acknowledged him and acknowledged his presence. The best friend references don't totally bother me. I wouldn't necessarily describe their relationship like that. But I also think that that's probably how Carrie would describe their relationship to her sister.
Yeah, because Carrie's not one. I mean, I don't think she would be like my boyfriend.
She was always in denial about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's so much psychology to, I think, what we saw on that the show actually showed that makes sense of their relationship, what the audience read into it, I think might have been different from maybe what the writer's intention was ultimately. Because I think there was no denying their chemistry. There was no denying, you know, some of the things that were said
between them. I don't agree with that. I think that it's really hard for me to swallow the fact that the writers were just writing a really like a best friend relationship for 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons, and we all just misinterpreted that as romance. Like, I felt like it was a romance that they told. They just told it a really shitty way, and there was no closure to it. And I don't necessarily see the therapist saying, you know, he was your best friend, and Carrie like agreeing with that as meaning that means that it wasn't a romance. That's not what I take from that at all.
I didn't either. I think you're right in terms of how she characterizes, like, I think she was just in that moment, like, yeah, that'll work. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think
she was totally uncomfortable being there.
Right.
She wasn't going to be like, actually, we were like, you know, in the midst of this like years long sort of like romance, but we never had sex and we kissed once and it was like so like no, she's not gonna say that. I think you're right. I think she was just like, yeah, like that's who he was. At the same time, he was her best friend. Like he was that to her. That doesn't, I think he can be her best friend, and their relationship also could have been romantic in nature, even if it never, you know, culminated in a sexual relationship or, you know, an actual romantic relationship. I think what they told is a romance, though. It was just badly executed at the end.
I think you make really good points, truthfully. And I feel like my anger sometimes with how that resulted gets the better of me when I talk about it, too. But I feel like something that they're explicit, I feel like they're trying to show now is, I don't think anyone, and I think they even said this at one point, like no one ever knew Carrie as well as he did. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an argument for that. And I think that her reaction being different this season than after Brody makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways to me too, because I feel like she's got this extra layer of Quinn was on her side. They were the good guys. And, you know, that betrayal that we talked about with Keen and just all this other stuff, like she's not going to let his death be for nothing. And I think that she's fuming that it feels that way to some degree. And I think that's, you're seeing a lot of this anger in this.
What do you mean by that? That she's fuming that it feels that way to some degree? What do you mean by that?
So what I mean is, I feel like, you know, when he died protecting Keen, at first it seems like, you know, he died protecting the president and it, mm-hmm. this was something that like was the right thing to do. And then, you know, later on in that episode of seasons, you know, 6, that the finale, where you learn that, you know, maybe he didn't die protecting the best person. You know, maybe that was not worth his life. And I think that realization for Carrie is something you spoke so well about last week, where you see her kind of snap. when she realizes that. I thought that was a great analogy because I think she has snapped. I think she's angry. I think she's angry that he's gone. I think she's angry at what went down. And I think that anger, grief, sadness, you know, all of that is this emotional state she's in compounded by her own condition, which I think they're trying to illustrate and make us question what percentage of all that is her illness and what percentage is this revenge, anger, you know, grief, drive.
Totally. What sure. Another sort of way to look at it is that, and this is something that Claire talked about a lot in the middle of season 3 and in the seasons leading up to that, just related to Carrie's own personality and how she interacts with people, is she is really frightened of intimacy and doesn't like to let people get close enough to where they can know her really well. And so it was kind of a defense mechanism. And the way that Claire used to put it is that it was entirely related to her condition, which ended up being semi-resolved at the end of season 4 when she talked to her mother. But it's this idea of she felt that her illness meant she couldn't be close to people. At the same time, she was really frightened of that. So it was kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, is that she used her illness and her sort of relentless drive and sort of determination and that sort of tunnel vision to kind of let people, or sorry, to not let people get close enough. At the same time, she was like so frightened of being alone. And that's been a constant the entire series leading back to season 1. She was so frightened of being alone, and it just was this kind of like vicious cycle. And so what I thought that you were maybe going toward, which could actually still be true, I think they actually both could, is that angry that she was feeling this way, it just reinforces this sort of concept in her brain that no good can come from letting people get that close, mm-hmm. and would actually lead her to shutting people out to an even greater degree. Because if she hadn't let Quinn get that close, if she hadn't gotten that close to him, if they hadn't embarked on this really intimate relationship, and it was extremely intimate. He lived in her home, you know, I think he knew almost all of her secrets, mm-hmm. you know, and he probably let her get as close as anyone else had before. And, you know, and then she lost him in such a horrific way, in a way that was, you know, partly her fault, like would just reinforce that that is not a thing that she can let happen again, which she experienced after she lost Brody. But this feels even more acute because it was Quinn, and because she was so close to him, and because the relationship was so intimate.
I agree. And I think the other thing too that they shared was this. She spoke about it in this episode, their oath. They both had taken this oath. They both were committed to their country. And, you know, I think back to the Q&A episode with when she's interrogating Brody. And at one point she says to him, like, you know, what do you tell people, you know, when they ask you about the war? And she relates to him by saying, like, I get it. Like, you know, you lie, because sometimes that's easier than saying, like, my interpreter was burned on a bridge, or, mm-hmm. you know, I think back to that because I feel like that's the other piece of this with Quinn, is he understood. He knew what she sacrificed, you know, in season 3. He was there, you know. You see him even like kind of saying like, whoa, like in the yoga play, saying like, I can't believe you've done this, you know? And so he's seen her, you know, kind of come from like finding Ebenezer in season 2, all the way, you know, through, he sees her for who she is, and he got that drive, and he was impressed by it. And I think he admired her for it. And I think in spite of her behavior and the manic, you know, stuff. And I think that's why he went to the hospital in season 3 to look out for her, is because he got that side of her. So I think it's even more acute because of that that other layer too of that that shared professionalism and care for the country.
Yeah, totally. I don't have anything more to add, but I guess sort of moving on from that scene with Carrie in the therapist's office where her therapist is like, are you aware that, you know, in a small percentage of the population, lithium can like stop being effective? And I actually really love the end of that scene. Carrie, or I guess it was Claire, the way that she reacted to that news, which I'm like, how can she not know that? But maybe she really doesn't know that. But the way that she kind of reacted to that, it was this really small facial expression. Her like mouth twitched a little bit. She seemed a little bit. It was like this mixture of like resignation and sadness that seemed to be mirrored to me at the end of the scene with Franny when she was putting Franny to bed and she looked back at her. It was really interesting. I don't know. Like, do you remember? And it's okay if you don't. I just like watched the Carrie scene so obsessively, but the first scene of season 5 when Carrie's in the church and she's praying. Remember at the very end, after she takes communion and she goes back to the to her seat and she's looking up, mm-hmm. you know, toward God, and her like face, she doesn't smile, but she does this like it, like her lips curve slightly upward, and she just kind of, it's kind of an unreadable expression a little bit. You're not really sure exactly what she's thinking. Is she feeling a mixture of peace, happiness, you know, hope? What is it? It reminded me a lot of that, even though the circumstances were so different. But the way that she did, it just made me kind of wonder what Claire was thinking about in that moment when, you know, the therapist is giving her this news that actually you could be losing your mind. Like, I don't know. It was just really interesting for me to watch that.
And that's kind of a really interesting parallel. I like that. I like that idea of that in both of those scenes, because that scene too, from season 5 that you're describing, I almost took it as like maybe she feels in that moment she should be relieved and she's not. And I kind of feel that emotion now that you're describing that. I felt that in both scenes. Like even in this, when that's I was watching it. Yeah, when I was watching this, she was almost just like, it's almost a sense of relief to maybe that, okay, I am not losing my mind. This is maybe something is happening to me. And then there's that fear that, oh my God, I'm not losing my mind. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Like it's, I think it's, this is for her so wrapped up in like her superpower on the show, which is this instincts and the drive to figure these things out. That, you know, she went off her meds purposely in season 5, soon after that, you mm-hmm. know, to figure all this out. But this time, this isn't an intentional choice that we know of yet. I don't know if it is or not. I don't think it is. But I thought that reaction was very interesting. And I think it speaks to, you know, Claire's acting in that scene too, that I just thought those were some really well acted, powerful scenes, even though, I felt, you know, I will say it felt fresh too, because we've seen that Carrie in different iterations. This version felt fresh to me, which I appreciated that.
I much appreciated the end of the scene much more than kind of the beginning of it, which felt a little bit like, it felt kind of like obligatory stuff that they had to get through. Until when they kind of revealed, I mean, it's definitely a new reveal. The meds aren't working. Last week, you know, we talked about how they made a point to say that she was on her meds. So we know that she's not trying to kind of invoke that superpower intentionally, which is obviously what happened the last time we saw her behave, you know, similar to this. That they're adding a new wrinkle in saying, you know, your meds probably aren't working anymore, or they might not have. I think then that just sets up the entire, it sets up two things. It sets up Carrie to feel like, okay, well, maybe I'm, maybe this isn't just me feeling like really driven and angry and, you know, hyped up all the time just because, you know, that's how upset I am. Maybe it is like, maybe there's something wrong with my brain chemistry right now. And it also sets up the audience again to question it once again, because we have it at the beginning of the episode rather than the end. So I think it sets up the entire chain of events of everything that comes after. And so I think, you know, the next really important scene is, I would say probably when she's talking to Franny, and Franny says, I like it here. Why are you upset all the time though? And why are you always yelling at Uncle Bill? And that clearly catches her off guard. You know, once again, it calls back to the sort of wise child thing, which is definitely a trope of film and TV. But all things considered, it was probably one of the better Carrie Franny scenes. And this is going to sound really super dense of me, but like I didn't get the context of Franny being like, why are you so mad all the time? And then, you know, 30 minutes later at the end of the episode, her like beating the shit out of that guy until I rewatched it like a few times. But that's just, I'm going to tell that. That was dense of me.
well, and I feel like too, the show is you're getting reaction from other people around Carrie and how they see her. Last mm-hmm. episode, Maggie was just kind of like, do you hear yourself? Like, right. Yeah, I get it. You got to save the world now. You know, like she was very like, okay. And then in this episode, you see the therapist saying to her, like, did you hear what you just said?
Yeah. Like, how does what you said
sound? Are you sure? Yeah. And then Franny's even saying it, like, why are you so angry? Like, there's people around Carrie that are seeing this behavior and they're calling her out, which I think is going to come back to bite her ginormously later on. I think that's why it's such a setup episode, is it's establishing things haven't been okay maybe for a while either. And
it's establishing too that her kid is noticing. I mean, we know that's going to be important. That is not a throwaway thing. Right. And like we have to talk about that, because we were like briefly talking about it this morning. I am so confused about what they're doing with Carrie and Franny. I really felt like I used to understand what they were doing. I felt like Carrie becoming a mother and learning to love her child and learning to sort of let someone else be dependent on her was a part of her, like, was a part of her series long journey. The same way that I just described, you know, how, and this is something that Claire talked about in season 3 when we knew that Carrie was pregnant, but we didn't know whether, like, what would really necessarily come of that. Was Carrie being frightened of another person being dependent on her, and that was a part of choosing to fall in love with Brody, was that she knew that it could never go anywhere. And I think that was in some way a part of pushing Quinn away, was that there was a future with him, like there was a potential future with him and she could actually be with him, but she was too afraid of it. She let Franny in, she learned to be a mother, you know, throughout season 4, and you know, especially between the time of season 4 and season 5, which we didn't get to see, but we know that that happened. She learned to love her child. At the same time, it feels like I feel like the show wants me to believe that she's a bad mother and that she shouldn't be a mother even though she loves her child. I think it's really hard for me to separate those things. Obviously, I mean I'm not a mother. I don't have kids. I don't necessarily even know if I want kids, but I think it's really hard for me to separate Carrie being a mother from Carrie loving her child, because I felt like that's how they introduced it, is they introduced that concept as well of like, if only she could love the child, then everything else would kind of follow afterward. I felt like that's how they introduced that. Like at the end of season 3, that's kind of what they establish, is, you know, she says, I don't feel love, all I feel is scared. Like, I felt like that's what they were doing. Now they've shown her as loving Franny, but is still not exhibiting the signs of a person who should necessarily be a mother. And it's very confusing for me. And I really don't, I don't know what the show wants me to believe. I don't know if they want me to believe that she's a good mother who just can't help herself, or if she's like a bad mother and she, I'm like so confused. I mean, and it could be totally obvious to everyone else who's just kind of like, duh, Sarah, of course, she's a bad mother and she like should not be taking care of this child.
I don't think it's as easy as that. I don't think it's as easy as that. Because I think truthfully, the only, we've only seen, okay, in season four, when we first see her as a mother, she's not doing it. She's not even trying. Like she has shut off that side of herself for a variety of reasons. And then she goes and season four happens, right? And it isn't really until, you know, we find out in season five that when she's driving away, you know, from Daradal's house with Saul, and after that falling out, does she blow up that side of her life, shut that door, and then becomes a mother? And you see, you know, that she had been a mom to Franny for 3 years and she had started this new life. We really never saw her being that good mother in that time, because season five then picks up and she ships right, you know, for right in that time it was for safety's sake, right? So they get Franny out of the way for safety's sake, so therefore there's no questioning Carrie as a mother. She's doing the right thing by protecting her safety. Season six, you know, you see Carrie still in that same place, you know, mother wise still shut off. You know, she turned down all of Saul's advances for coming back to the CIA and running her own crew. She has still shut off that side of herself completely. And this season, that is not the case. And here we are with that side switched back on and the mom side is faltering. And I think what the show hasn't, I don't know how to feel about it yet, but Carrie definitely has not found a balance to those two things yet. And I think that's clear. She can do one or the other. And I think what you're seeing is her attempt at doing both, and it doesn't seem to be off to a great start.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Wouldn't that suggest then that the show or that the writers are saying that she can't be both? She can't be both amazing at her job and willing to fight for her country and defend her country at all costs and be a mother? Those two things are fundamentally incompatible. And if that's the case, like, isn't that extremely sexist? Like, the show is written by a bunch of men. Like, it's not like there's women. I mean, there's two women in the writer's room, we know right now. There was maybe one. At various points over the years, there's been at most two women in the writer's room. Everyone else is a man. It seems then like her story is being dictated by men, that these men are dictating then that Carrie can't do both. When we know that in reality, women can do both. Or maybe they're just saying Carrie herself can't do both because Carrie is abnormal or
extraordinary. I don't know. We've had some really interesting talks, you know, offline. There's a person in the community, Inch by Inch, who she always has such phenomenal insight into this aspect. And in one of my conversations with her, she was talking about how, you know, if Carrie was a man, would she be having this, you know, this issue with a kid?
No, and of course not. We know the answer to that is no.
Right. And so to some degree, is it sexist? I think it is. And I don't enjoy saying that, but I think it's a fair, you know, criticism. But I also think that situationally on this show, you know, Carrie does have a lot on her plate with her health, with, you know, the spy side of herself, with, you know, the emotional attachments or lack thereof that she's had over her life. She was abandoned by her mother. I don't know if she knows what a healthy relationship with a mother looks like, because she probably didn't have one. And Maggie is really probably her only spirit guide in that realm, but she's at odds with her constantly because she's not in that headspace where Maggie wants her to be for her kid. So I think in the context of the show, the dramatic effect of having her in conflict with her kid and with Maggie and with, you know, all of the spy plotting and drama right. is complex, which I think is fascinating. But I don't know if the show has given us a clear sense of what they want to do with Carrie as a mom yet. I do think that...
Which just seems so... That seems... like I was thinking about this earlier and I was like, making Carrie a mother, deciding to, you know, make her pregnant, forget about who the father is. Like, just put that out of your mind. Suppose that... Like, it doesn't really matter who the father is for my argument right now. But they did it not really thinking about what this would mean. And so, actually, no, maybe it does matter who the father is. They did it because the father was supposed to be Brody and that was supposed to, you know, keep his presence alive on the show and sort of in some sort of meaningful way. Or that was kind of her sort of short-sightedness, I suppose, in deciding to keep the baby. But they didn't necessarily think through the consequences of what that would mean. I think they were like, okay, actually for this character right now, it makes sense that she would do this for reasons X, Y, and Z. But in the context of her not being a real person and this being a TV show that needs to be entertaining, like, it seems like they didn't think it through.
I don't know. I think time will tell. I remember early interviews where Alex Gonza and Howard Gordon and some of like the higher ups on the show would talk about, you know, real life CIA agents that they had, you know, talked to and, mm-hmm. and kind of modeled her after. And one of them was Valerie Plame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Valerie in her story, and it's, and there's, you know, she's got a ton of drama and you know, intrigue in her own story, but she ended up not having kids until the end of her, what would be the end of her career. I don't think that was her intention for her to career to end, obviously, as short as it did, but I thought it was kind of interesting that when they used to hearken back and talk about the ideas for Carrie and who she was, that one of them was this woman who you know, was covert and was in covert action and had this family. And then how did she balance that, you know, and the questions of that. Ultimately, you know, I think that when they're meeting with these real spies on their field trips that we hear every fucking time they're on TV, about their field trip to DC, which, hey, Showtime, we get it. You do these. Let's talk about something else. But so anyway, on these field trips, I'm sure there's a real life aspect where these people, they are not just people who go to and from work. I'm sure they have lives and family and, you know, relationships and whatnot. So I think introducing that into her character was probably something that was thought out. I just think that every season since, it's been like, okay, how can we get, you know, how can we separate her from Franny so she can go do the real work? And I feel like that it's kind of created a Franny problem. And
well, to
I think
me, it just feels like they're half-assing it. It feels like they're like, it feels like they were like, this is going to be, you know, an aspect of her character that we're going to commit to, and it's going to show her growth as a character. And it feels like they've half-assed it, definitely in season 5. In season 6, again, it was confusing to me what they're doing. It's confusing now, only 2 episodes in. Like, I want to sort of exercise restraint, but I've also, we've seen 3 seasons of this so far, and I'm not sure that they, it seems like they're trying to tell these 2 stories and they're just not compatible. They don't exist in the same TV show, I guess.
I could see that. I think they are a little disjointed right now. Maybe we won't feel that way, you know, as the season rolls down. I think that's a fair criticism. I feel like my mindset going into this season was very much like, I think this is a bridge to season 8 where they're mm-hmm. trying to get everybody emotionally and physically in the locations that they want to make that final push. So I don't want this season to be one big setup because I think that would be awful. But I do feel like, you know, for Carrie, to complete her journey, however that looks, which I hope she comes, you know, some full circle to some degree. I mean, we don't want this to be her kind of running in place metaphorically forever. But I think things have to naturally get kind of worse for her in order for them to ever get any better. I think we're seeing the signs of that deterioration of kind of her life right now, which I think is going to make for some difficult viewing for Carrie fans as the season goes on. But I feel like it's probably a necessary part of her arc that we're struggling to make sense of, because it feels the story is getting more focused now. And I think that's a criticism of where what they've been doing for two seasons. That's fair. And in doing so, I think it doesn't feel like it jibes with what we've been watching. And I think we're picking up on that. And I think this Franny thing for sure is part of that. Like it's the last two seasons with Franny's storyline, it's all over the map. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Totally is. It's so hard. I feel like, and you know, again, I'm not a mother. It's just confusing to me. Carrie's behavior is confusing. I really sense that she loves her kid. I feel that. I feel that in Claire's performance, and I feel that in the dialogue too, in the acting, and kind of how they pay homage to that. I feel it. It feels like. The same time I'm like, girlfriend, like, why can't you get it through your head? Like, I'm so like, maybe it's more telling and not showing, or maybe her actions are contradictory and I'm just confused by that. I know motherhood's extremely complex. I can't relate to it firsthand. Like I said, I'm not a mother. It just feels like it feels confusing to me.
I do feel like it is possible to, you know, love your child with all that you have and maybe not be the best parent. I feel like there's,
and that's I think that was what's hard for me to separate, because I feel like at one point the show says if only she could love her kid, that's the key to it all. Like that's the key. She just needs to love her. She just needs to let her in. She needs to sort of surrender herself to that kind of love. Maybe what they meant is it needs to be selfless love, and maybe it's not selfless love because Carrie still hasn't learned to put Franny ahead of her own
sort of I think that's drive, it.
Determination.
And yeah, I think that's it. And I think that it's not even – I think Carrie can be a very selfish character for sure, but I feel like
– absolutely.
Carrie, right, 100%. But I feel like her biggest – weakness is she puts the country first over everyone, including herself, and
which is, know, in some ways a selfish act. Like it's selfless in some ways, in some ways it's also selfish,
which is Carrie, kind of like the show is both siderism, like they're both sidisms, you know.
It's selfless. She will give up anything to defend the country. It's selfish because she's doing it at the expense of people who need her more.
Right, exactly.
All right. Okay.
Heavy stuff.
Oh, God. I felt like this is like a therapy session. Okay. So, all right. So there's the scene where Carrie, you know, where Franny says, Mom, why are you so mad all the time? And she's like, oh, we just disagree, which is, I think what I'm going to say when people are like, why are you so angry? I'm just like, I'm just disagreeing right now. Which then leads to potentially one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the show, which is Carrie goes back to her bedroom, turns off the lights, decides actually she doesn't want to sleep in the dark, opens up her laptop, goes onto 4chan and is like reading memes on 4chan and falls asleep. For people who don't know, 4chan is like the cesspool of the internet. It's like every stereotype that you have that's bad about Reddit is like 4chan lacks all of the like intelligent people that Reddit actually does have. It's basically just people who are shitposting but don't realize that they're shitposting. And so the fact that she went onto Reddit and was reading these memes that some person in that writer's room was responsible for making up, like all of the messages and stuff that you saw on her computer and say like the images from like these paint versions or whatever of Elizabeth Keane, like, jerking off, like, a penis. Like, someone actually went and made those. Ashley and I were howling at the TV because we could not take it. We thought it was hysterical that Carrie was looking at this. And then she falls asleep. And then the next morning, like you said, you know, it says, oh, I'm like the whole premise is that she needs to know who this woman was who was in Wellington's home, asks on this politically incorrect sort of sub. And then the next morning downloads a JPEG file that turns out to be ransomware. Not the first time Carrie has done a boneheaded thing related to a computer. So maybe she just skipped that day of CIA training where they say, by the way, don't ever just like not download an attachment on an email from someone you don't know, but also maybe don't download JPEGs from an anonymous person on fucking 4chan. Like, oh my God. I read this one review that was like, Homeland again. Like, your appreciation of Homeland begins and ends with like how much disbelief you're willing to suspend for like how stupid Carrie can stupid Carrie.
Oh, yeah. That was on AV Club.
She does acknowledge. Yeah. Yeah, that was on AV Club. What she does acknowledge, she was just like, wow, I'm so fucking stupid. I can't believe I did this. And the generous part of me is like, well, she just woke up. You know, clearly she was hungover from reading all those memes on the internet. But still, like, dude, who does that? From an anonymous person on 4chan? I'm like, God, come on. Anyway, she gets herself into a predicament because, you know, obviously her computer is hacked. She doesn't have $5,000 because she perpetually has, you know, 2 hotel rooms booked at expensive DC hotels. So she's in $38,000 of credit card debt. Maggie, like, oh, God. I don't know. The whole thing is a fucking mess. If the really – I think the way that I sort of rationalize it is, okay, they presented a problem for Carrie and they wanted to see how she'd solve it. This happens about 20 or 30 minutes into the episode, so it's a little bit like, okay, so now this is the real plot. But to me, it just seemed like, here's a problem. How would the Carrie that you're looking at right now attempt to solve this problem? Because she doesn't have the money to pay off this person. What is she going to do? And the answer is that she's basically going to use her sexuality and then her, you know, extreme rage to solve this problem.
And one of the most cringeworthy scenes for sure. Right.
Which one are you referring to? The one where
I'm talking about at the computer.
Massaging her breasts on camera?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. So like, oh man. When that spoiler, so there was like a spoiler related to that. There was some sort of audition scene that came out at the very end of October that I watched. And I usually don't watch those scenes, but I watched it because people were freaking out about it. And I said, I kind of have to know what this is that's so bad. And I watched it. And the guy that they ended up casting was not the same as the guy who was in this video. I like the guy who was in the video better. He was more smarmy than like pasty white dude. But anyways, that's beside the point. But I watched it and I thought it didn't bother me. I was like, this is so ridiculous. It was like too outlandish, I think, for me to be upset with. I know I'm in the minority. I know it's totally ridiculous and cringeworthy and offensive. But I also feel like they kind of did it in a way that was different for me. It was less about, I don't know, Carrie had control over it in a way, and she knew that she had control over it. She knew that this guy was a misogynist who, you know, she kind of played her cards close to her chest, no pun intended with the word chest, but like she didn't necessarily like reveal what her hand was. She's done this before. She views sex as a transaction. I guess it didn't surprise or shock me. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I didn't like it. It made me uncomfortable. And maybe
make me feel good watching it. It did make me. Yeah. I think I was actually shocked that like they filmed it the way that they did. I never would have thought that Claire would have gone along with that, actually. She's very sort of modest in her career. It's not like, obviously, they showed like full frontal nudity or whatever, but I think I was like surprised that she was like, yep, sure, I'll like, I mean, because what I saw in the audition video was almost exactly what I saw on screen, with the exception of at the end of the audition video, the guy like begins to masturbate, which I was really glad that they didn't show, because that would have made it even worse. But I think in context, when I first saw the scene, I wanted to like, or sorry, when I watched the scene on Sunday night before seeing the end of the episode, I wanted to like crawl into a hole and like die. But
me too.
In combination with the end, it seems like she was ultimately triumphant, and she used the man's sort of gross sexual desire and misogyny of underestimating her to her own advantage. So I feel two ways about it. On the one hand, I feel like it was gross and manipulative and kind of like a cheap way of showing skin on Showtime. On the other hand, she ultimately had control over the situation, which was entertaining to see. And I don't know if it's not like I felt like empowered by it, but I think I felt like, oh God, I'm going to get myself in trouble for saying this. But like, I wasn't super surprised. She just uses sex as a transaction, and that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, that aspect of it didn't bother me, I guess, because I think there has been a pattern established for her with her relationship, you know.
Absolutely.
With sex like that.
This was not new at all.
Right, no. And I feel like, too, what I thought
people
was interesting
people were a lot
is,
more offended when she had sex in season four with, like, Ion,
yeah.
A lot more offended. Tons
and I get that,
more
too.
Offended.
Yeah, I feel like, though, what I thought was interesting in the close-ups of her, once again, Leslie Linka Glatter did this so well, is you see her in the mirror kind of like, oh, you know, like looking at herself like, oh, my God, like, this is who I am. Like, what, you know, and like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in this place. And then you see that the curtain drop and you see her start to get that steely resolve. And then they zoom in on her
face
again.
Which is exactly what she did. I mean, that's exactly what she did in season four before she sort of makes the moves on Ion. She like goes to get the sheets of the pillar or whatever. She looks in the mirror because at that point, she knows what she's about to do. But like, it's not something that she's not so dead inside, I suppose, that she doesn't have to like work up the courage and the resolve to do it. Courage isn't the right word, but it's not like she just like goes to that place immediately and doesn't need to kind of work to it. I think that I totally agree with you. She was like, all right, I'm out of options now. I'm going to go to my go-to, I suppose, which is turn on the charm and try to have sex with him.
Well, that, you know, you see her lying again all over the place. I mean, you see her lying to Maggie just before so she can try to get this cleaned up. She doesn't want to, you know, take Franny to school. She, you know, has this another fake interview.
Why does Maggie believe that she has an interview? Like, come on, Maggie, come on.
I know.
Come on, girlfriend.
And Maggie's like, yeah, good luck with that. And you see her like with, oh, yeah, the interview I just lied about.
She's like, what? Yeah. Maggie?
Oh, yeah, I just said it.
I don't know.
That was pretty funny. But I also thought when she's interacting with the hacker, like that Carrie that's smiling and flirty and fun is such a lie. And she's just totally, Carrie is acting that. And I thought that was interesting that they zoomed in on her face and showed you that again, especially after, you know, the first episode where you see some of those close-ups of her not, where you know she's not okay. I found some of those very interesting again, and I thought they were good choices because they're showing this, we are seeing what's going on behind the curtain with her, whereas not everyone is. And she's not in a good place, and this stuff is just compounding.
No, I mean, absolutely not. she's absolutely not. I think what, I don't condone or endorse women using sex to get what they want or necessarily using their bodies to get what they want. Like, I wish that she didn't have to do that. At the end of the day, though, it worked because that's what, to some extent, men view women as. And she knows that and she's clued into that. Like, do we fault her for doing something like that when that was potentially the only avenue she had? I guess I don't fault her for doing that. I wouldn't say that that was, I don't know. It's just like separating Carrie is like, okay, she's a fictional character, you know. But this is not a new pattern. She's been doing this since season one, you know, sort of using sex to get what she wants. We saw that in the very first episode of the entire series with Saul, where he sort of figures out that she's installed the cameras in Brody's house. And she's like, tell me what I can do to make this right, and sort of makes a pass on him. Like, we knew that from the very beginning that she believed that this was a not only viable way, but sort of justifiable way. I don't know if I would say that she's proud of it, but it's also worked, and it worked in this instance. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying that she's like a feminist here or whatever for doing this, but at the same time, she's reacting to circumstances and conditions of sort of gender dynamics that allow that to be an effective way to sort of get the job done. And I don't fault her for doing that.
Yeah, I have more of an issue with her opening the JPEG.
That was really stupid. I, as someone who works in, you know, a technological field, that was stupid. Like, oh God. They should put, like, a disclaimer that says, like, don't open attachments from people you don't know. But, yeah, that was dumb. That was dumb, but I don't know. Carrie's sometimes dumb. So, okay, so we have the scene where Carrie, she takes off her shirt, takes off her bra, you know, begins to feel herself up for this guy, says, it's not for free. We have to do this in person. You have to unlock my computer. Leading into the very last scene, which was really, really well directed and totally suspenseful. And I actually loved that scene. It was totally feeding into sort of tropes of, you know, action, you know, 24, Peter Quinn, et cetera. We've never kind of seen Carrie act like that before. And this was sort of the bookend to the beginning of the episode where she's in the therapist's office and is like, well, Quinn would understand what this or what this was about and what I was doing, and he'd be right here beside me because he always had my back. And then she sort of invokes him in that same way in that scene. You know, it starts again where she's using her sexuality to lure him. She pretends that she can't get the clasp on her top undone so that he would come closer to her. And then she like headbutts him in a really violent way. And then, you know, they fight. She takes out the retractable baton and like goes to town on his ass. Like, oh my God, I can't even believe that. It was actually pretty thrilling to watch. But I liked it. The end though, you know, where she nearly kills him, nearly crushes his windpipe, but stops, is what I think made it all the more interesting. And I think really showed where she is mentally and psychologically.
Well, in the callbacks too, I know this was a question and ask that came into the blog, you know, saying like, doesn't that scene remind you of Quinn's scene with Belly in the kitchen? Mm-hmm. And it does to some degree, because they're both raw. They both have lost someone close to them. They are both, you know, devastated, and they want to do something about it. And, you know, Quinn at that point in season six had, you know, there was no consequence that was going to stop him there. Like, he didn't care. Right. He had let go of all of that, where Carrie still does care. And I think that Franny is probably her anchor mm-hmm. to her conscience right now. I think she used to have more anchors.
Quinn.
I think Quinn was the voice in her ear. And they even said as much in season four. He was the one kind of reminding her of humanity, you know, keep mm-hmm. her humanity, keeping her going, you know, telling her, like, is there no line? And, you know, maybe he's doing that in that moment unspoken. I felt like, you know, you brought up a good point earlier today, and we answered that in that blog post too, was like that face she makes just as she's choking him, where she catches herself, is so reminiscent of her in the Franny drowning scene from season four too, right. where she's like horrified at herself and like, oh my God, I have to stop, you know, like, before it goes too far. And I feel like the grief in those two scenes anchor each other, because she is just, it's palpable. And, you know, in that scene with Franny, and she wants, in that scene, she just wants it all to go away. And she's not looking to kill Franny per se, just more of like, I think she just really wants it gone, all of it, the sadness, the reminders, everything. And in this, you know, this side, you're seeing, instead of that just profound, detached sadness, here she is almost the opposite of that, where it's this profound emotional connection that she is, you know,
it's rage.
It's coloring everything. Like, you know, to quote Alex Gonza, I think it's coloring everything, you know, and that rage is just, she's on the edge. You're seeing that. And I thought that was a really profound ask that came in with that, because I think all of these things are calling back to Quinn, you know, from the credits throughout. I think you're making really good correlations, because I think there is some symmetry in a lot of these callbacks and how they, you know, they're opening the episode and closing it. It's very interesting, like her trajectory right now, emotionally.
I mean, the Carrie arc of this episode is really what saved it for me. I'm always up for a good Carrie arc in any episode. It was definitely the saving grace of the episode for me. The reason that I thought of the Franny drowning scene during that sort of last moment where she's sort of crushing his windpipe is that scene, that clip was in the opening credits. And so it was in the front of my mind for that reason. The reason that I felt like it was Quinn that had pulled her back is, again, at the end of the opening credits, we hear those last few lines from the letter where he says, just think of me as a beacon, you know, steering you clear of the rocks. And for the longest time, Quinn was her conscience. Quinn was that for multiple seasons. And, you know, he was her moral compass, and he was the person who was asking her to be more human and to acknowledge the toll and the consequences of her actions. And that's the way that I think I always felt that connection was really profound and actually very well done on the show, how they did that. What I really appreciated, that, you know, that last sequence, because apart from just being super well directed and really well edited too, like I really appreciated the way that they pieced, you know, all those aspects together, and it seemed to flow really well from one thing to the next while still being incredibly suspenseful. I liked just how that turned. You know, Carrie's a good actor. You know, she knew exactly what she was going to do. She had her entire game plan. She was prepared. She went in. Sometimes it's nice to see Carrie sort of do that. You know, she's been dealt a lot of blows, and as much as I know that this might actually not be the right way to watch the show, to watch the show, it is nice to see Carrie sort of go into superhero mode and sort of he got a win like that, even though it was extremely hard to come by and degrading in the process in some ways. What I appreciated about that scene from an intellectual level, I suppose, is that is the way they sort of inverted control. You know, the scene begins with the guy on the phone directing her exactly where to go. He says, leave the bag, leave your jacket in the car, go this way, back the way you came, now turn left, do this, now put your phone down, you don't need it anymore, now take off your shirt, and he's entirely in control. And then it switches. It switches the second he says, turn around, you know, and he walks up behind her. And then it switches to, again, being about her sexuality and her understanding exactly how to use that to her advantage. And then she just loses control, you know. She loses control at the same time she's completely in control. And so I appreciated both the inversion of the power dynamics in that scene and how they portrayed it. And I also, again, appreciated, you know, from the standpoint of to be able to do that. And I referenced this in a response on the blog because a lot of people were like, what was the point of this scene? Like, is the hacker coming back again? Is this something we should be thinking about? Or is it just kind of a throwaway to sort of let us know our mental state? What I said is, like, Carrie and Quinn were both people. And again, at the beginning of the episode, Carrie establishes that they were different from everyone else. No one else gets it. Carrie and Quinn were the same because like you said, they both took an oath to protect the country. And Carrie and Quinn were also both people, you know, who were in the CIA. And the CIA, to some extent, trains you to be kind of, to have that total control in a situation, you know, to remain calm, cool-headed, reasoned, rational, don't lose your cool, etc. But they're also people who are able to detach from that part of themselves. You know, we've already talked about the ways in which Quinn did. He did at the end of season 4, too. It reminded me of, you know, when he captured Ghazi at the end of 410, you know, and took him to that, like, room to begin to torture him. Like, it's extremely, it's calculated, but at the same time, in order to do that, you kind of have to shut out the part of your brain that says that you shouldn't be doing this. You know, that part that society has in some ways instilled in us and said, this is wrong. You know, you shouldn't be like beating a guy to death and kicking him in the face and killing him or choking him. Like, you know, you shouldn't be doing those things. They are able to turn off and sort of relinquish that control in a way. So it's kind of a paradox. They retain control in some ways, in other ways they have to completely let go. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought that scene, it felt like the bookend to the beginning of the episode where she's talking about Quinn, because it felt like her invoking Quinn to me.
Well, and also too, she's still good at her job. And it doesn't feel that way when you watch it. You're kind of like, oh God, like, why are you doing this? Or, you're questioning
right.
her.
Well, yeah.
You're questioning her, but ultimately like she does the right thing.
Yeah. That's another thing. Like at the end when she says, I'm CIA. Like Carrie is not in the CIA and she hasn't been for like two seasons now, potentially, you know, like three show years. Like she has not been in the CIA for a really long time. She still identifies in that way. That felt extremely significant to me.
Well, and then my favorite part of Homeland has always been the mystery, the spy stuff of it. And so when I heard that, I was like, oh shit, is she back in the CIA and we don't know about it yet? Like, I was like, yes,
okay.
Like, let that
you're
be a reveal.
You're not the first person
like,
to say that. Yeah. You're not the first person to suggest that. To me, that's not where my head went. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think it's just saying that she identifies with that part of herself more than any other part of herself.
I think that's totally true, too. I mean, like, I think she might be back in the CIA, but that too.
At her core, yeah, I guess. At her core, Carrie's always CIA. she's always CIA, and she, I don't know. The reason that I don't necessarily think she's back and we don't know it is, wouldn't that invalidate the sort of Quinn parts of this? And also, isn't that like what happened in season three? In season three, we begin, we think, oh, she's on the outside. Everyone's, you know, out to get her. It's Carrie versus Saul. And then it turns out that it was like a plan all along. And it was a ruse. It was a trick to Laura and Javadi. Like that was the plot of the beginning of season three, at least. So yeah. That feels like, okay, well, been there, done that. The part about Quinn, though, is like Carrie is very hostile right now towards the government.
Well, so is the intelligence agencies. And you're seeing that. I mean, that's part of Keane's problem right now, is that she doesn't have them on our side. Even when, you know, Keane's scenes, when at the beginning, when she's getting the report on McClendon, and she's like, well, Brett O'Keefe says this, that, you know, and those, the two people that are there to brief her on what's happening, you know, she's just like, well, you're not telling me anything new. Like, and you almost get the sense that they don't want to debrief her. They don't want to share intel with her. I think that's, you're supposed to start it. They're trying to show us her relationship with the intelligence community. So the part of me that thinks Carrie might be back with the CIA.
Yeah, I get it.
You know,
maybe
that's more of where that is, but I think ultimately your correlation with Carrie is right. I think she identifies that way, especially when she's like this. Like, she's on the hunt. She's almost like her own little side station right now. It's just her and Max. There's no Farrah, no Farrah, no Quinn. Like, she's on her own, but.
I know, man.
Yeah.
If we lose Max, I don't know what to do.
Oh, God, don't even say it.
I don't know what Carrie would do.
Don't
who
even
else,
talk that way.
Who else can tell Carrie, look, you really should not have clicked on that JPEG from some anonymous poster on 4chan.
Who's going to tell Carrie how bad it is if Max isn't there?
Max is like, this is so bad that even I can't fix this.
This is so bad, I've run out of words to describe it. It's bad. It's really bad.
Okay. I don't know if I have much more about Carrie. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about kind of O'Keefe and Saul and kind of what they set up with them that this week.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, the O'Keefe storyline, but I understand why it's there, so I will I'll live with it. I did find it interesting that he got caught talking shit about the fringe crazies. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, that maybe he doesn't buy it as much as he seems like he might. Like, I feel like his shtick is very much shtick to some
degree.
Well,
we talked about
that
last week of him just kind of being – yeah. We talked about that last week of him just kind of being like a figurehead but not totally in touch with the quote-unquote movement or rebellion, as it were.
Yeah. And
like, it's the moneymaker, but does he really – believe it? Or, you know, like you said, is it just a front? Is it just shtick?
Yeah, I think
it's a good point.
I thought that was really interesting. The only really interesting aspect of his storyline this week, but it was great.
Okay,
to see
I
him
did
get
find
shot
like
in the head.
I did get a lot of pleasure out of seeing. Well, okay, so the other thing, I mean, they sort of drew multiple lines and sort of differentiated between O'Keefe and you know, the family and the people who are who were there as like the host. The first was, you know, obviously they overheard him, you know, talking about like the right wing fringe crazies. The second was that he's like, oh, I haven't shot a gun since, you know, I was in summer camp, and that was like 40 years ago, you know. And then there was the other thing, like he didn't get the tattoo thing at first. There were sort of multiple instances, I think, where maybe they were trying to highlight that he was potentially like a phony, like he didn't necessarily understand this. I mean, if you think, like, O'Keefe is like living in New York City, he's extremely wealthy, he like runs this radio show, media empire. Like, he doesn't necessarily understand the quote-unquote plight of these people whom he's speaking to.
Yeah, very disconnected.
It's a little bit more, like, I don't necessarily care about his character or about his story. It's kind of an interesting commentary to make, you know, about right-wing media personalities who don't necessarily connect or relate to, you know, the people that they're speaking. I mean, this is like the entire thing with Trump, you know, like Trump's a billionaire and yet his biggest supporters are people, you know, he sort of casts himself as the like saving grace to blue collar America and he's going to make America great again and all these things. He doesn't like, he's never really had to like work and like
he has a gold toilet. His toilet right, is exactly. 24 karat gold.
He was born with a silver like spoon in his mouth. He doesn't like know what these people are experiencing. And that's kind of an interesting commentary to make, which might be what they're doing, is that they're presenting O'Keefe as kind of like, I know he's modeled after Alex Jones. And before like a week ago, I'd never seen a single clip of Alex Jones just because I love myself too much. But like, it's kind of like he's like the Sean Hannity. Like, I think that's more how I see him. I don't really know a lot about Alex Jones' background or necessarily, but like Sean Hannity is, you know, like working Fox News. He's like a millionaire. He doesn't really understand what these people are going through or like their actual grievances, whether or not they're grounded in some sort of honest truth or not. He's a talking head. That's what O'Keefe is. O'Keefe is a talking head. And what people connect to more than necessarily the substance of it is the anger and the rage. And that's a parallel perhaps that they're drawing with Carrie. Those are the two things that are uniting them right now is rage.
I agree with that. And I think too, this is bringing in the Saul storyline. And so it serves, you know, some logistics purposes for the show too now, which that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today is, you know, I found it interesting that Saul is a prisoner again. So Saul in season 4 gets captured. He's in.
Also from the preview of the next episode, it looks like again he's captured. Did you see that?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was about to say was like in season 4 he's captured as, you know, he's captured by Haqqani. And you see him kind of just be like, I am not going to be a part of this. I'm like, kill me. Like, I don't want him to use me this way. And now this season, it's kind of like Wellington comes to see him at the prison, offers him, I think how you stated it was best, is like this devil's bargain. Like, hey, come work for us and you can get out of jail. And Saul opens the scene. We see him first before Wellington walks in and he is anxious. He's tapping. And then when Wellington walks in, he sits back and he's playing it cool. And I thought it was interesting that the show gave us that glimpse. Saul wants out. And he, make no bones about it, he is going to take this deal. Is the impression I got. He wants out and he's trying to play hard with Wellington, but the second he can get out, he gets out and he says, you know what? I'm not going to be a pawn. I'm none of these things. And then the very first job they give him is like, hey, now you're our pawn. So go get O'Keefe. Cause since when is the FBI or is the National Security Advisor, going to meet with a rogue, you know, lawless, you know,
it was a setup.
And I think clearly he's their pawn. And so for me, I thought what was interesting about Saul is I feel like he got out of one prison to get into another. I feel like he's still very much trapped by his circumstances. I just think he has a little bit more freedom to watch what he wants on TV when he gets back to his hotel room. But I think that Saul is very much in a new prison of his own making now.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I'll be honest, I wasn't totally moved or interested by the Saul and O'Keefe parts. This season, I think you're right. It was totally a setup episode. They had to connect the dots between, like, they had to connect the dots of these people because they start the season also distanced from each other, and so they now they have to bring them together and sort of intertwine them. I am continually amazed how Saul can. I'm so frustrated. I feel like Saul is so bad at his job, and yet he was director of the CIA. He was the like counterterrorism chief or whatever at the CIA, you know, in the first two seasons. He I don't know what he was doing in season five and six, but okay. Well, in season six, he was the advisor to the president after having a sexual relationship with a Russian mole. And then he goes to federal prison and now he's the national security advisor. It's like this. He is like the definition of what's it called? Like the Peter principle, like people who just continually fail and get promoted. Like
he fails up.
Right. He fails upward. That's his MO, is he's an upward failer. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised when we know Alex Gonza sees himself through Saul. I'm sure that, I don't know. I don't think that anyone else is like acknowledging that, like, dude, like this dude, he has not had a victory or a win in a really long time. And yet he keeps rising to higher and higher positions of power in the government.
But when he does have a win, it's because of Carrie. And I feel like there's a scene right. that I, the one, but my favorite Saul credit. Scene. Well, and what's interesting is my favorite Saul scene is actually in the last episode of season five, where he is interrogating Ivan. And mm-hmm. he has this scene where he says, you know, he says to him, like, I get it. You had this, you made a masterpiece. I appreciate it. You know, like basically saying, like with Allison, like you knew when to laugh at her jokes, like you knew everything, you know, you were this close to achieving it all. And I always feel like in that moment, Saul is also talking about him and Carrie, and he's relating to his relationship with Carrie in that moment to Ivan and Allison. And I thought that was very telling of how Saul.
What do you mean? Like how are they similar?
Okay, so with Ivan and Allison, he was her handler. So he was, you know, he knew when to push her buttons. He knew when to praise her. He knew when to admonish her, to get everything out of her, to you know, and look what she was able to do, right? And in that moment in season five, Saul is kind of like saying to Ivan, like, I'm impressed that you did that with her. Like, I'm an intelligence officer from one to another. And I always felt like in that scene, he's relating because of his relationship with Carrie. Carrie is almost like his golden goose. Like she, it's through her intelligence that Saul's career, I think, has had any success. I think we got some of that even in season one. There's, you know, a lot of alluding to their relationship. She's the one who grabs that bag at the last minute in the smile episode of season two, that ultimately, you know, proves her right with the video of Brody. Mm-hmm. And she's the one, you know, that gets Javadi, hook, line, and sinker. She's the one who, brings down the bomb at Hopinoff. She's the one, you know, who has figured out a lot of these things. And I feel like it's all.
But he's the one who's right. But she's the one who's shut out, and he's the one who keeps rising. I think that I'm of like kind of two minds about the Saul Carrie relationship. When I first started watching the show, you know, right, kind of at the start of season two, catching up with season one, it was like, and even throughout season two, it was like the defining part of the show for me. It was so profound and so resonant to me, and I felt it was so well portrayed. They portrayed it as a relationship of real love and kinship, and I felt like they would do anything for each other. I felt like there was something really pure, and it felt like the heart of the show to me. And I really love that. If you go back to the very early archives of the blog, I like waxed poetic about all of that. I was totally in love with that relationship. As I felt like it changed from something symbiotic, and they both kind of got something out of this relationship, and they were like a team together. And then in season three, it was like he was manipulating her. We know now, season three, the reason that Carrie had such a intense reaction to what happened at the beginning of season three is because Saul presented one aspect of a plan to her and then went much further. You know, I think what we know now is that he probably said, well, you know, I'm going to put out some stories in the newspaper, going to leak some stuff to the press. You act really crazy in front of the Senate. Go to, you know, a newsroom and act really crazy. And then, like, that will be the extent of it, and that will be enough. Well, it wasn't enough to lure Javadi out, and instead he went multiple steps farther. Like, I think it's clear that that's what happened, and it drove a wedge into the relationship that to this day hasn't been resolved. I think that there's a lot of resentment in that relationship now, which pains me because, you know, I still, you know, there's certain scenes where I go back and I'm like, oh God, this relationship was so beautiful. It was so heartfelt, and I loved watching them. I love watching Claire and Mandy together on screen. I loved watching that dynamic of them as a team. And now it feels like things are so broken and shitty. And it's like, at the same time, I think I would be really frustrated if they went back to kind of how it used to be. So I kind of feel like they ruined it for no good reason. Like, I don't know. It's really challenging, that relationship, because, you know, watching the show from Carrie's perspective, and for her, I always, you know, am biased towards her, and it feels like she gets the short end of every single stick. And he
takes advantage of it. And that's what I mean, is I, you know,
well, he takes advantage, but she also keeps going back, like some sort of abusive. I mean, it's like an abusive relationship.
I don't know if I would go that far on it. I see parallels to that, but I also feel like,
how can you not say it's an abusive relationship if he left her in a mental hospital for 4 weeks in season three when he could have gotten her out? And then she went back. And then she went back to him.
Yeah, I feel, for me, I guess I see it differently. I felt like that season five episode changed how I viewed the relationship. I feel like now I get it. He is her handler and she is his asset. And once I put it in that context, everything else made sense to me. I think they genuinely care about each other, and I think he's very much Uncle Saul. Too. But I also feel like he is very much her handler.
I think he does genuinely care about her. I think that the way sometimes that the relationship is described, especially by Mandy, is too, it's like in too rosy terms. And there's not as much nuance as what actually exists in the relationship. Seeing their relationship as asset handler is really interesting, and that may be how he views it, and that may be totally correct. But if that's not how she views it, then I think that that's really messed up.
Well, I think that's where the imbalance is. And that's what I'm interested to see, is kind of how they bring them back together at some point. I think we're going to see them on screen together this season. It's just a matter of when. I don't know what that storyline looks like yet. I mean, clearly she's on the hunt, you know, for the truth here. I think Saul is going to start his position is going to align at some point with her mission, once he gets the O'Keefe shit put to bed. And because I feel like, you know, I actually felt like they were in a better place at the end of season five until season six opened. And then you see where she gets really mad at him in her new office when he's kind of questioning her, even though he's completely right. She's like so deeply offended that he's asking, you know, these questions, and she's secretly advising the president. That's so interesting,
because I saw the scene the exact opposite, and I felt like this is what my theory is about the end of season five. I feel like Saul pressured Carrie into waking Quinn up when she didn't want to, which we know, like, that happened for a reason. And he was the one who said, you know him better than anyone else, you know, he was pressuring her to wake him up and sort of he was appealing to her sense of duty, you know, her sense of patriotic duty. Ultimately she did. She kind of did what Saul wanted to do and they woke him up. And it had catastrophic consequences, we later find out. What I see from them at the end of season five in that scene where he proposes that she comes back to the CIA and, you know, she can have her own team and all this other stuff is I feel like resentment. Like when she walks out of the hospital room and he says, how's he doing or something. It's been a really long time since I watched it, but he inquires as to how Quinn is doing and she's just like, not great. And she says it in a really sort of short tone and his response is, okay, well, I didn't come here to like argue with you. And that to me says that there is some deep-seated resentment and she resents him for, you know, having some influence and trying to sway her to wake him up, which she ultimately did. She can't necessarily blame him, but I still think she resents him. And Carrie was so... she was so jaded at the end of season four with him and with the CIA, which he eventually came to represent. He treated her horribly during season five. He didn't believe her when her life was at risk. He only began to believe her when the evidence was, you know, overwhelming in her favor. That sense of trust to me was broken. It was broken at the end of season four, persisted throughout season five. The only thing that allowed them to sort of stay together was they're both, you know, they both took an oath and feel that sort of duty. And ultimately the situation, you know, and the consequences were so extreme that it was kind of like they had nowhere else to turn. Carrie was completely lost and alone at the end of season five, and Saul kind of was too, and they kind of turned back to that. In season six, I felt like it was more of the same. Carrie had radicalized, isn't the right term, but she began to embody really, to embody and to, you know, voice views that were really sort of against, I suppose, what the CIA and sort of the intelligence establishment was trying to get Keane to do. And I think Saul saw that as a betrayal. And so there was just deep sort of distrust between them. I haven't felt like their relationship has been the same since the end of season two. The second their fight at the end of season two, when they're in the halls of the CIA and he says, I think that I just got you, you know, a job as station chief. And she's like, well, I don't know if I want to take it. And then they were talking about Brody, and you know, he says he's a man who put on a suicide vest, that's who he's always gonna be. And she says, well, maybe I don't want to be alone my whole fucking life. And then, you know, you're the smartest and the dumbest fucking person. Like that scene, nothing has ever been the same since that. I think that Saul, and this kind of goes back to the asset handler thing, and this is not an original thought, Jacob Clifton, who used to write the Television Without Pity reviews, summarize this in such a beautiful way that I'm going to paraphrase it and probably butcher it, but Saul sees them as fundamentally the same person. And that's a person who's going to give everything up for, you know, in pursuit of the mission. And when Carrie exhibits behavior or tells that says that she's not going to do that, when she's going to go against him, and again, you're right, if he sees her as the acid and him as the handler, then she should be kind of following his instructions and doing what she says. But when she defies him, and when she defies him in such a fundamental way as to say, the way you live your life is not how I want to live mine, when he thinks that they're the same person and they're kind of cut from the same mold, he lashes out in ways where he isolates her and punishes her. And I think that that's probably sort of one of the main thesis statements of the entire show. It's kind of what that dynamic is between them. I keep going back to the season one episode where she's sitting in his office and she says, I'm going to be alone my entire life. This right after Saul's wife leaves America because he just can't make it work. And he's always going to be the person who picks up the phone in the middle of the night and goes to work and sort of responds to that call. And I think at that moment, he doesn't want her to grow out of that. Because if she grows out of that, then he's alone and he doesn't have anyone to sort of commiserate with.
Well, and to that point, I think in season six, when they're out on the bench and she says, you know, he's like, you know, basically like, well, you fucked the guy in the suicide vest. And she's like, well, you fucked the Russian spy. You know what I mean? Right. And I think they're on, I think they're,
such
I think
a great the show scene. Put them back. That's probably one of my all-time favorite lines. So great.
Right. And they're snarky with each other. But I feel like in that moment, the show was kind of said like, they're back to being equals again. Like, you did a shitty thing, now so did I. And so here they are as, you know, equals again. And, you know, when Saul got put in jail, that's when she was just kind of like, what the fuck is this? And that kind of is what set off that betrayal with Keane and her realization that maybe Quinn didn't die protecting the right person here, that set off that whole chain of events. And so, you know, she's been spending these last 3 months, you know, in pursuit of, you know, this truth and trying to get Saul out. And then in this episode to come downstairs and like all of a sudden, not only is he out, she didn't get a phone call like, hey, grab coffee. Like he's like out and like on the White House lawn, like, hey, I'm the NSA director, motherfuckers. Like, you know, he's just like out there.
Right.
And not only like, adding insult to injury, Bill is all like, na 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 boo boo, you're wrong again. And like, try to admit it now, you know? And she's like, no, like she's like incensed. So I'm guessing like her reunion with Saul is not going to be teddy bears and flowers when it does happen.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it will be at all. It just sort of, it again reinforces that dynamic where they're at odds. You know, she just called Bill a collaborator in the last episode. And now Saul's his, like, the fucking national security advisor. Like, you can't get much more of a collaborator than that. And I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. They haven't yet shared a scene, though. So who knows?
She's going to be straight, like, you couldn't fucking call me.
I like that. They like, you couldn't have just asked me out for fucking coffee, Saul. Like, I was the one trying to get you out of jail for the last 3 months, and you couldn't even like send me a text message or like DM me or something and be like, oh, BT dubs, I got out. Like,
slide into my DMs before I download the hacker.
No, don't say slide into me. Don't say slide into DMs because that has some.
Oh, different connotations. See, I'm old. I'm old. I'm not hip. And I can't, I'm not hip.
I can't fathom that. Shut up and let me go. This hurts. I